I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Talk about the VOD and the silver screen. Kevin and Tom and Joe know all there is to know, from masterpieces to deep fried tacos. And if the movie sucks, you might hear them say, there's no telling where the guys will take you. Get ready for a spoiler. Won't say it twice, cause we're already.
Broadcasting from the lush but not lavish studios located in the basement of the O'Keefe Institute for Advanced Film Snarkitude, this is Real Spoilers, episode 700.
A milestone. Wait.
No, it's an actual milestone.
A milestone.
A milestone. Okay. Chattanooga cha-cha. What is this? I don't know.
Sure.
Sure. I always get it wrong. It's tradition. So it's weird. We hit 700. And Joe's not here.
And Joe's not here, so instead of trying to figure out a big specialty episode and what are we going to do for 700, it's like, well, if one of the three people, I mean, originally we had five, then four, yeah, then three.
It's so, like an Agatha Christie novel.
Yeah.
The non-racist title.
So, oh, man.
So it's like, yeah, let's not try to do the big specialty one now. So, you know, if we do a specialty one soon, why not have 701 or 702 be the celebration? You know,
sure.
It's like
707, everyone's favorite airplane.
There you go. Exactly. Yeah. And we'll do what's a good airplane? We'll do airplane.
There you go. Airport.
Airport.
Yeah. So we should introduce our guest because he's like, can I talk? Can I not talk? I don't know what the etiquette is here. But he's been on many a times. But it's Sharia Chavla. How you doing?
I'm doing good. Thank you for having me once again. And finally, I can talk.
Yes. Someday, maybe we should do this to Brad Hyen one time. We should have him on as a guest and then never introduce him.
Introduce the very end of the movie.
Yeah.
And that's all the time we have.
Yeah, thanks for joining. He'll be our Matt Damon, which is the only time anyone will ever compare Brad Hyen to Matt Damon.
Aww.
Does Brad do crypto ads? Like, once he starts doing that, then we should, you know.
Did you guys see the article online about Matt Damon's cameo artistry?
Like, on the website Cameo?
No.
I was like, are things that bad? It's bad enough he's selling cryptocurrency. Now he's on Cameo? What happened?
No.
So there's a thing called Harrow. I don't know if you've ever heard of it. It's called Help a Reporter Out. And you can sign up, and every day you get, they send out three emails with all these different journalists.
Yeah.
Looking for people to answer specific questions, and it can be on entertainment, it can be on science, it's just all over the map, you know, and then you can pick the categories that you're interested in. There was one, I think it was Mel Magazine, and it was, and it said, looking for men who love Good Will Hunting, and I'm just like, is that like a girl movie? Like, is that a movie that men don't tend to like?
Hmm.
I just thought Good Will Hunting was a movie everybody loved. Like, I
think so too. I wonder what the purpose of having maybe they have some kind of a discussion where they wanted to get a male perspective.
Because there's so little of that in the world.
No, right. But maybe there's a specific reason why the discussion was going to go there. Because I don't think that movie has a gender
bias. I just
didn't
know if there was something about Good Will Hunting that I didn't like. If you're doing like, oh, we're looking for men who like Hallmark Christmas movies. Okay,
right.
Like that I get, but Good Will Hunting, like Good Will Hunting's great. Who doesn't?
I haven't met anybody who doesn't like that movie.
Right. Yeah, it's like Shawshank or
regardless
something.
Regardless of gender.
Right. Like, yeah, it's just a universally crowd-pleasing film. Like, anyway.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Well, so back to Matt Damon cameo artist.
Yes.
So, you know, Matt Damon's popped up in a lot of cameos, and I didn't realize just how many, but Noah Jattel wrote a piece for The Ringer, and it's really good. It goes over all of his cameo roles, and there's quite a few of them. I mean, I'm talking like a dozen. I mean, he's
right.
A big actor, but he will show up in little movies as one-scene roles, you know, tiny cameos. And so he goes through and details them and ranks them and explains what he's doing in each one. And the point is that Matt Damon doesn't just show up in a movie to do a cameo like, oh, it's Matt Damon. Like, he shows up and acts in these scenes, right? He comes prepared to actually do whatever the role calls for. So, you know, a lot of things are throwaway gags when it comes to cameos. So it's interesting that he's such a big actor. He's been in huge movies. He's been in like the art house movies and then also the big studio movies like Bourne, and has become a star, but he will do these cameos. I guess he just loves to do it, and he helps out his friends who ask him. Obviously Kevin Smith many times. The guys that did Euro Trip, which I talked about on one of the Deep Fried Tacos, he went to college with them, actually, the guys that did that movie. So he showed up in Euro Trip because of their relationship. And so check that article out. Again, it's on The Ringer, and it's a really good read. I just think it's interesting because sometimes I question that too. Like, even in the Marvel movies. Now, those are big movies, but that's Matt Damio in a gag
Damio?
Base.
Damio. See,
that's his nickname.
He's
right?
done so many cameos. He's legally changed his name to Damio.
Exactly. But that's Matt Damon.
You know, the thing that really surprised me about Matt Damon doing a cameo in Thor, spoiler, is that it kind of then means that he can never be
An actual
character, like mainstream hero in a Marvel movie, because he did this little thing. I mean, I guess if they really wanted to, they could figure out a way. But it seems like it definitely throws up a barrier to him turning around and playing a reboot of Iron Man or something.
Yeah.
But then on the plus side, I mean, I think the best example is, like, I think in Civil War, there was Alfred Woodard at that one scene, and then she's a villain in Luke Cage. Like a full-fledged villain.
Yeah.
So
you're right.
They
could work around it. But I agree, though, is that a lot of people, when someone shows up for a small role in the MCU, they say, oh, why did they waste them in that? Because look how many characters. There, obviously, in comics, there are thousands of opportunities to play these characters. And so, but I just thought it was really interesting. If you think about it, and reading the article definitely opened my eyes to ones I didn't even know.
Yeah.
And I'm like, that is a lot of cameos for basically an A-list actor. He's a big name.
No, he's absolutely an A-list
and
actor.
I respect him for that. I don't like everything he's ever done, but you know
I
what?
I think that's true of anyone.
Yeah, but you know, he shows up. I will say it does seem that he shows up for the role and is prepared to do it. I don't know of any Matt Damon cash grabs, and I think just all the cameos.
Well, the crypto ads.
Well, those are not cash technically because they're...
Okay. Yeah. Okay, well then that Chinese movie.
Yeah, The Great Wall. Well,
there we go. That was cash grab. Sorry, that was cash grab.
But you don't think he showed up to play?
Oh,
I mean,
I see.
Paid,
no,
I'm
he
just,
did what he was supposed to do.
That's what I'm saying. I don't think he's ever taken a 10 or 15.
He didn't phone it in.
Yeah,
but
exactly.
The movie itself is a cash grab, and I'm sure that they threw a ton of money at him to do that, but he did not phone it in.
Exactly, because there's some actors that will take a $5 or $10 million to film a couple days or whatever, just literal cash grabs. And it's like, you know, Damon, to his credit, I don't think he's ever done that. And he will show up just to help friends out or just to be in an interesting little role. And there's something to respect about that.
No, I would agree. Yeah. So before we get into the movie, shameless plugs, don't forget we're available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, wherever you find a podcast, you can find us. While you're there, be sure and follow us so you never miss an episode. Maybe leave a review. We got not only the best review in the history of the show, but I would say maybe the best review in the history of podcast reviews.
It's true. It's pretty great. You've got it pulled up.
This is a 5-star review, which, first off, if you want to be considered one of the greatest reviews in the history of the show, it's got to be 5 stars.
Yeah, we're not going to go, oh my gosh, guys, check this out. Yeah. This 3-star review was just popping.
So it says, great podcast. Joe's mom bought a small piece of furniture from my wife and mentioned that her son was on a movie podcast. She said her son loves Star Wars and Marvel movies, which I also love. I was reluctant to listen at first, but was hooked very quickly. Very entertaining show and great insight into all of the movies. Thanks, guys. Would love to hang out.
That's a great review.
Yeah.
That is an amazing review right there.
And I love the just the stars that had to align.
Totally.
For that. Who is that?
It says Alexander's dad.
Alexander's dad. Okay.
On Apple Podcasts.
Just everything lined up perfectly for Alexander's dad to listen to the podcast through all those connections. And, you know, to give them credit for even checking it out, because, okay, if some mom goes to your furniture store or buys a furniture on Mark, whatever the situation is, from your spouse.
Oh, my son's a nerd. He talks into his iPhone. You should listen.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. the fact that Alexander's dad is like, okay, I'm going to give this a shot, because that sounds like a mom being like, yeah, my son has a podcast.
My guess is I feel like he listened thinking, oh, this is going to be awful. Like, I have
morbid curiosity.
Like, I have to hear how awful this is going to be, right? And he's like, oh,
they have a theme song that plays before their show.
How about that? There's a whole thing there. Yeah, okay.
They have guests like the Sharia Chavla on the podcast
multiple times,
one and only.
Yes. So Ed, that is, I love it. It's such a great review. I'm really glad they found the show and are enjoying it. And thank you for the kind words. Like, that is,
if you haven't already changed your mind, he could have bailed by now.
Yeah. Oh, I didn't know. They were gonna...
But you can bail midway through episode. I'm out of here.
Yeah. Yeah. It is not beneath a guest to do it. I mean, it can happen.
Yeah, we've had co-hosts do it.
Yeah.
So,
but no, that's great. And thank you. And that does help, though, because when other people see 5-star reviews like that, it lets them weed through all the podcasts, because there are so many, because anyone's son can do it. And it's not a knock. Like, that's great that they can, but it just means it's really hard to find ones because there's so many. So that is the kind of thing that will help.
For sure. And then also don't forget, we have a Facebook page, facebook.com/realspoilers. You can join the League of Show Sharers, which is the name of our group. And we're also hoping you maybe actually share an episode in real life. People who were kind enough to share an episode this week: Librarian Cynthia, Heather Sachs, Tammy Sherman Powers, Gabriel Lugo, Julianne Jordan, Josh Rosen, David Rojas, Brendan McGuckin, Tom Dowdy, Chris Falls, Glenn Cougar, Melon Brewer, Chris Magic Man, Travis Tewitt, Chris Williams, Geek to Me Radio, The Manic Pixie Weirdo Podcast, Mike and Oscar, In Session Film, Spoiler Piece Theater, Ryan Terry from the Four's a Crowd Podcast, Binge Movies, Ronnie Castle, Invasion of the Remake, Chris Wilson, Feelin' Film, Minorities Report, and Matt Naglia. So thank you very much. We greatly appreciate that. And then finally, we do have a Patreon, patreon.com/realspoilers, where for $5 a month, you get all sorts of bonus content, and you help us out, and we like you more. So there's all that. Let's dig in.
So I have never seen this director's other movie. Has anyone seen House here?
Does My First Marriage count?
No, that's the title of a movie.
Oh, okay.
So Cooper Rafe is the writer director of this film, and I have never seen his 2020 hit, or at least indie darling, House. And a lot of people have raved about it, and I didn't have time to go back and watch it because I kind of wanted to after this one, so I was curious if anyone did, but apparently it you know, people liked it enough and
liked it enough to let him make another movie.
Let him make another one. Exactly. So I liked this guy. I don't know what your guys' first impressions were, but this movie reminded me a lot about, because I'm kind of trying to classify this movie of like what type of film it is.
It's like mumblecore adjacent.
It would be right, because when I was watching it, I was thinking mumblecore, and this is a guy that I don't know from that world, and maybe he hit the scene in 2020 and kind of became a part of it.
Well, I think like he made a short film, which was turned into the feature film. I don't want to say House because I don't talk like that.
Oh, yeah. I'm so sorry.
But I think part of the way he got the money for that is he posted it on YouTube, and he tweeted it at Mark Duplass.
Okay, so...
Or one of them. They're the same guy in my head. I don't know. And so...
Well, they're Jay and Mark Duplass are both...
Okay. No, I'm just saying I don't remember which is which.
Yeah, they're just... Yeah. They're an entity. Look, the Duplass brothers.
Right. And I know they're not anymore. They're still brothers, but they're working separately now. Oh. Right. But but I've always... There's certain
they
people...
They didn't get divorced.
There are certain people that get linked, and then I have trouble separating them in my head. True story. When I was a kid... I didn't know which one was Howard Cosell and which one was Muhammad Ali. Like, I had to stop. I was like, because it.
And you admit that. Freely.
Yeah. I didn't. I mean, I didn't pay attention to sports. I just knew one was always talking to the other.
Yeah.
Like, that's that.
Yeah.
Then anyway. So, but he tweeted it at him or them, and they liked it, and that worked.
Okay, so Cooper probably is inspired by that type of filmmaking then.
Seems fair.
Tweeted at them and made a movie, because my first thought was Mumblecore.
Right.
So I like, some of those can be hit or miss, I should say. Mm-hmm. I do like some of them. Some of them are a little too meandering, but
right.
I do like Slice of Life.
Like
I do
Puffy
like,
Chair?
Yeah.
Where is that going?
Yeah, some of it's...
I wanted to like it, but it was just like, that's it? We drove to a place and we drove back?
Like, I can see that. Yeah. So some of those are a little bit, I don't know. They're too meandering for me, but I do in general like that. I do like, I don't know if you'd call it slice of life, but I like movies where people are figuring stuff out, because I think everyone can relate to them, whether it be a relationship or job, or obviously there's very relatable thing, whether it's work or family or relationship, like people have to figure this stuff out. And so this movie reminded me a lot of Garden State, which is one of my favorite movies, written and directed by Zach Braff. Have you guys seen that?
A million years ago.
Yeah. Natalie Portman is, she plays the, you know, manic pixie dream girl.
I saw it pre-Backlash.
Yeah. Yeah. So I like it. I know now people are like, I don't know. It's weird because now people like to hate on the movie. People still like it in general, but I've heard some weird stuff about it. And I'm like, I don't know. I really liked it. I saw it in theaters at the Frontenac. You know, it was an art house, only an art house movie, and I really liked it. So this reminded me of that, and it's just a writer director that's starring in the movie, but he's trying to figure his stuff out. And
I enjoyed it as well. I thought it was it helps that he's likable,
yeah.
And so you get sucked into this world. It's not a big story, but it's to me it played very much like a modern day version of The Graduate.
Yeah, I can see that. Yeah,
that is
definitely
the best comparison, I would say. Yeah, that. Modern Day Graduate thing.
Yeah.
Thank you.
I think I definitely felt like that.
It's like, what if we made The Graduate, but people made good choices?
Right, exactly. Like
pretty much, exactly.
Yeah.
And that is kind of refreshing, too, because at the end of the day, I don't know, I'm not one that always needs a bow on it, or I want to say happy ending. It's not that it's a sad ending, but like, I think there's a point in time, I think older movies sometimes... It's kind of weird because it goes back and forth. I think sometimes really old movies would tack on a happy ending because they thought audiences needed that.
Yeah.
And then at some point they got away from that and it was like, no, we can do movies that are a little more bleak or unhappy. And then I feel like they kind of went back around to, oh, yeah, we want audiences to be happy. And so I don't always need to leave the theater being like, oh, the main character should leave with the victory. And I just, you know, totally happy. But I think there's so much to learn in between all that from the start to finish of this film. And he's grown as a person and also what's healthy for you, like not to just totally jump ahead, but in the end of the film, it's like they've come to the realization that when you're at different parts of your life, you can't just, you're not always going to be on the same wavelength as your partner or the person that you're interested in. Right.
Yeah.
And so even though it may not be like the happy ending, quote unquote, I think overall your life may flourish a bit more. If that makes sense.
For sure. I think that's like, you've seen The Graduate, right?
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, I think that's what makes the last shot of The Graduate so great, is that they do give you the happy ending, and then it holds for like 15 seconds past the happy ending, where it's like a dog chasing a car that finally catches it, and it's like, now what? And there is that moment of like, is this happy? Like, what is this life really going to look like? You had your big grand gesture moment, but now what? And so this movie kind of inverses that.
Yeah,
you know,
it just sort of addresses the abrasiveness of it a little more upfront, because it's like, hey, you want to do all of these things, you have this person you clearly like, Dakota Johnson, and you know, you're trying to make all these rash decisions into trying to make stuff work with her, or you know, putting aside other stuff, sacrificing other things. But the problem is it's the immaturity of it, of sorts, the sort of selfishness that's behind it. I like the fact that they don't shy away from that. He's clearly telling you, like, man, I don't know what I'm doing. I don't know whether or not this is a good idea. It's probably a horrible idea. But I like the fact that they never shied away from that. So when he's kind of being a bit of a douche, like in some sequences, like it's like, well, yeah, because you don't really know.
Yeah,
for sure. And neither does she. Like, she sends a lot of mixed signals to him because she's interested but conflicted. And and so she kind of keeps throwing herself at him and then throwing herself back. You know?
And it's interesting because this film operates with a couple of different parallels. In the beginning of the film, you see Andrew. He's 12 years old and he's at a party. Was it another bar mitzvah or just a party? I can't remember what that one was.
But I just assumed it was a bar mitzvah.
Okay. Yeah. So they're at a bar mitzvah, which kind of sets up what we'll be seeing the rest of the film. And there's this, like a party, he calls himself a party starter. This person is basically just running it, like the DJ host. Would.
Yeah.
Playing games with the kids and everything. And he goes to his mom and he says, I'm in love. And he's 12 years old. This person running the party is probably, maybe she's 18 or 20 or so, young, but still, like, he's 12. And she's like, are you sure? And he's like, yeah, I'm sure. And he goes to talk to her after the party. And, you know, and she's just like, it's just funny, some of the lines and the way she's like, that's flattering, but I'm old.
Yeah.
Like, it's very sweet. And she wasn't like, oh, grossed out. She's like, I'm flattered, but I'm old. And it cuts flash forward to 10 years later. So that starts off what, I mean, really, that's the same as the ending. The beginning and the ending are the exact same, essentially.
I'm trying to think about that.
Right?
Yeah.
So that's the first parallel you get, is it's like, wow, they showed us right up front what was going to happen.
He's
again.
Got a thing for older women.
He does. They should, but that's essentially what happens to him in the end, spoilers. But obviously, there's a lot of good stuff to get through. Also, his mom is stuck in this marriage. It's Leslie Mann and Brad Garrett. Is like Brad Garrett's his stepdad. And you get the sense that it's not like she is totally unhappy and hates Brad Garrett's character or anything, but like from this conversation between her and her kids, he also has a little brother who comes into the story.
It feels like an arrangement.
It's comfortable.
Yeah.
Right?
Like they're not in sync fully.
Yeah. And that he offers her a lifestyle and level of security she is not able to achieve on her own.
Exactly. Because the kids say, Mom, are you happy? It's Andrew and his brother David. They're talking to her. Are you happy? Because they're like, yeah, he's kind of a, you know, he's kind of a jerk or whatever. You know, he's not great. And she says something like, I'm comfortable or I'm safe or I'm, you know what I mean? Like she dodges the question of, are you happy? And it's like, I'm comfortable living here. He provides for us.
Yeah.
And it's like I think you see that a lot in relationships. And that's also we're going to run into that very soon when we get to Dakota Johnson.
Mm-hmm.
She's engaged to a lawyer and she has a nice house and they're able to provide for her daughter. But clearly she's not happy. She's going out looking for happiness constantly throughout this film.
I don't know that she's not happy. Like, I think the movie wants you to question whether or not she's happy. But I think when you get to the end, I think there's an excitement level when you're in a new relationship. Mm. And then that levels off. And so this guy's new and shiny. I mean, because that's what she says. You're all possibilities.
Yeah.
Right? Like, you're not that he's an infinite number of possibilities, yeah. but that his existence for her is nothing but possibilities. Like there's been no realism to their relationship thus far. And so it's very easy to think that the grass is greener with this guy, but that's not necessarily going to be the case. If they were to go down that road, things would get very real, very quick. And they'd have a 1,000-yard stare on the back of a bus, just like The Graduate.
Yeah.
You know,
that's a good point. It's interesting. So the way I liked that line a lot when she said that, and the way I took it was not necessarily because he's a new relationship, but it was like, it's all a dream. It's all a fantasy until it's a reality.
Mm-hmm.
And so if they never date or even get to be together, it can always be this fantasy of, oh, what it could be. And you know, and they're not living realistically, like you said. And so once you actually pull the trigger on that, no matter what relationship, you're going to get the fights and the, you know, the issues. And just like with any relationship, do you work through them or do you throw in the towel, or, you know, how compatible are you? So I really liked that. And but it's interesting you read it that way. I'm curious what Sharia thought, because to me, I thought it was pretty clear that she was never going to be totally happy, truly happy with this guy, that he provided for them just like the mother and Brad Garrett, and gave them a nice house, and he's a lawyer, he makes plenty of money. But I mean, she was engaged to this guy and she's gonna cheat on him with Cooper or Andrew. She's gonna go out to these clubs and she was with guys there partying, and it's like, I don't know that just because she got married that would ever change. I think, you know, mm-hmm. I mean, he does end up moving his work closer so he doesn't have to be away as much, but you know, in my mind it's like, this isn't gonna really work out between them. You know, I don't know. What did you think, Sharia?
Conflict with Andrew throughout the entire movie, because he's, of course, trying to figure out what his life is going to be. The moments with Dakota Johnson, whose character's name, I'm
Domino.
Like it's Domino, right. Okay, so Domino, I feel like there's a point of, like, in her life where she seems to be on the cusp of it. Like, hey, do I want to try and go back to this, you know, sort of, you know, phase where everything is still uncertain and, you know, try to make some mistakes or what happens next? Because I've lived through that phase. And I know the fact that, you know, there are some decisions and certain things that have to happen in order to reach, you know, this moment in your life. So the way I kind of read the whole thing is that when at the end, when she's telling him, I thought, you know, it's a good point. It's like, there are so many experiences and infinite possibilities that you have, but the problem is you're going into this expecting like things will work out a certain way, but life doesn't go that way. And so until you have that happen to you, until you actually live out these years and start trying to jump to it, you're not going to quite understand what I'm talking about. And I don't want to rob you of that.
Yeah.
But she's been through that. So she obviously has a more perspective. Like, listen, I'm whether or not I'm going to be forever happy with this guy, you know, that's debatable. You know, we don't really get a clear indication of that. And I think the movie doesn't even want to give us one. But that kind of factors into it. It's like, that part is uncertain. You can't fixate like, okay, I'll take you away from this guy and you have a daughter too. I'll raise her. Everything's going to work out perfectly. Yeah. It's a fairy tale.
It's just not. And I mean, I don't think reading it as her never being happy is necessarily incorrect. I feel like it's almost saying something about marriage in general, that the two marriages we see are both kind of like, it's an arrangement of some sort. And because all marriages are, right? And marriage is a constant negotiation. And as long as it's serving the needs of those two people, that's ultimately all that really matters. And
it seems like kind of a bleak view on marriage, though, because
I don't know that it is, because if the two people involved are happy with that deal, what, you know, this idea of marriage being like all about love, is that's a relatively recent concept, right? Like, that's it, you know, for years and years, marriage was a business relationship. You merge these two families and there's a dowry and you share property. And I'm not saying we should go back to that by any stretch of the imagination, but I think both of these relationships that we see, or marriages that we see, they're a version of love. They're just not the Hollywood lovey-dovey version of love.
Yeah.
You know,
and the thing I like is that sometimes when you are trying to show a marriage that maybe isn't the happiest marriage, or if there's problems, they show one of the spouses, usually the husband, being abusive or having, you know, anger issues or drinking issues, or, you know, you got to get out of this, you're not happy or whatever. But to their credit, it's not a bad situation.
Right.
I just didn't get that either of the women in those marriages were going to be truly happy. But I do feel like the husbands or we're going to take care of them and the kids and care about them. It's not, you know, it's more than just an arrangement, but there was obviously a love there, but they didn't seem happy, but also the guys weren't.
They didn't
jerks.
Make the guys a villain to do it.
Exactly.
Right. Like, I really thought they were going to go that way with the husband. I can't remember Domino's husband's name.
Joseph, the lawyer.
Yeah. I thought that, you know, but they really show him in two separate instances being really nice,
keeping his cool when he could have not.
And one of those instances, I should say, and then a third instance, he was really mad and threatened, and he still was nice.
Yeah, which I thought that was an interesting head fake, because we are totally so programmed to be like, and I mean,
and a good performance from him that you could see all of that going on, right?
Yeah,
you know, he was clearly threatened by Andrew and didn't like what was going on, but to the best of his knowledge, it hadn't gotten far enough to where he could actually make a stink about it. But you could still see that, like, he's like, this ain't cool. I don't dig this. I will also say that there's only one relationship we see from the inside, and that's Andrew's and Domino's. The other relationships, I'm not really counting Maisie as a relationship, even though she was adorable. But what was the face, Sharia?
No, I was just like, right? She was.
Right, yeah. I was the whole time, I'm like, Maisie, what are you doing? Like, yeah, but so the other thing is we only see the mom and the stepdad and Domino and Joe, we only see their relationships from the outside.
Yeah.
So it's easy for us to project unhappiness on them because that's all we see. We don't see the other moments. We don't see.
I just see the way Domino's acting. Someone's happy, I mean, she's engaged and she's out there.
She's clearly conflicted.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And to me, it felt like settling. I totally get that read on it, and you're right. We don't see the inside of those relationships, but part of what I took away at the end that I thought was really cool was that Domino ends up giving Andrew the chance to find the happiness, because if they got together, Andrew has, well, he's just starting a new job. I know that we're jumping around. This is the end, but he's looking for a real job the whole time. He's working at a food court restaurant.
Yeah.
He's trying to do these parties that we'll get into, these bar mitzvahs and parties start and get paid a little there, but that's not really working out. And he's applying to jobs, but like he has these qualities about him where he just cannot keep his mouth shut, like making jokes. Like he just does not know when
right.
to.
The same thing that makes him a great party starter makes him an awful party starter.
Yeah, exactly. And interviewee, like the stuff he blurts out, they're funny to us. I mean, it's well written and it's very funny, but it's like, you know, when this guy's interviewing you for a job,
yeah.
he's like, yeah, I don't want someone saying this stuff. I want someone dependable. And so, but by the end of the movie, it's like he's just starting to figure his stuff out. And if he were to get together with Dakota Johnson, she doesn't have a job that I see. And they've got a child to take care of. And he doesn't, at this point, you know, he's just going to be starting a new job, but he doesn't even know at this point. So if they got together, where would they go? Are they going to live in
right.
his mom and Brad Garrett's basement? Like, you know what I mean? What future is that?
And I think when I talk about how these other marriages are kind of arrangements, but that's not necessarily a bad thing, is that like that's the pragmatic version of what makes a good relationship, right? Like, it's not just these two people love each other. Like, what are these two going to do
yeah.
if they ended up together? Like, they're not equipped to build a life together yet. Like, he's working at Meat Sticks and party planning, and she doesn't appear to do much of anything. So like, yeah, what are they going to do? So it doesn't, on some level, it doesn't matter if they just have the most purest love in the world, you still got to pay the rent.
Yeah. And I think that is what ultimately, he mentions soulmates, and it's a really cute line. The little moments in this movie, and there's a lot of them, that's what I really love about it. And other than the big picture, just living in these little slice of life type moments, and he's such a charming guy, and it's well written. I mean, he wrote a lot of these charming lines, like
right.
these, not pickup lines, but these little interactions between
yeah.
these women. And he talks about soulmates, and he says he believes in soulmates, and everyone has a certain amount of number. And she says, how many do I have? And he says, 4. And
yeah.
She says, how many do you have? He says, 1,200.
1,200, yeah.
So, you know, you get that cute little interaction. I loved all the back and forth between Andrew and Domino. At the end of the movie, he's like, I do believe I was one of those four. Like, they
yeah.
can't be together, but he still thinks he was one. And he goes, and Joseph is too. Like, it's a really nice moment. So even though you may have this certain number of soulmates you could connect with, it may not be feasible, right? Like,
right.
like on some level, you may agree, have the same sense of humor and have that physical attraction and think in the same ways about certain things. But like, if you don't have anywhere to live, like you said, like if there's no house,
right.
if there's no money to pay the bills, all the love in the world, as you said, won't do anything, right? And
yeah.
so there may be another person that you're also just as compatible with, right? A
yeah.
quote-unquote soulmate. So Joseph may be one of them for her, and hopefully their marriage does work out. But I like the idea that there still was a connection. It wasn't like they didn't go through some big fight and throw down and
right.
some things didn't work out and they got back together. And I like that she ended up being with Joseph because it was the practical reason. And I really like that she let him go find one of his other soulmates.
Yeah.
Right? Because if they were to get together, it would have never worked. They would have broken up within a year probably.
Yeah.
Because they would have had to figure stuff out.
And then it stops being fun, right? Like
yeah.
it's not possibilities, it's reality, and that's very different.
Yeah. So
let us remember there is a daughter in play here, you know, and he's not a dad yet. He's not ready to take this on.
Yeah.
And I really like their relationship. Too, you know,
yeah, it was very sweet.
It is
yeah.
very sweet. So she has a daughter who is autistic, and
Lola,
and played by Vanessa Bergart, and she really is autistic.
Oh, is she?
That I read.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
I thought she did a great job.
Mm-hmm.
I thought the actor
yeah.
did a great job. I really liked their relationships together. I liked Andrew's relationships. A lot of it, he's very charming. He's very funny. But, you know, he does hide that bit of himself that's hurting and trying to search for who he is. And we end up seeing that in the film. You know, when he's not doing the party starting, he's trying to figure his stuff out.
Yeah.
And I think he's really good at the dramatic stuff as well. But you're right. You've got this daughter. And as much as he's good at babysitting her, and we should say she's like a teenager. She's not really young, but still.
I think she's supposed to be about 15.
15, okay.
Well, because they say that, like, so all these bar mitzvahs they're going to, that happens when you're 13.
Oh, and she's a couple years older.
And they say she's a couple years older, so that she's been held back a couple times.
Okay,
so,
got it. So, so they still, so even though she's 15, she's not like a real, real young daughter, but they still, you know, want to make sure someone's there if they're not at home. And so he's good at babysitting, he's good at playing board games, but like Sharia said, is he fit to take care of a stepchild, like, full time? At his point in his life, without a job, without a house.
Right.
I mean, I think he's working on it.
And how's he going to feel 10 years in? Yeah. Right. Like that's, and I think that's the point she makes at the end of the movie, is that, you know, if you do this, you're going to, first off, Second, there will come a point in your life where you'll be resentful. And that's where she's at.
I was going to say, in 10 years from now, he's where she is.
Yeah.
Right? Because, I mean, she appears, he's 22. She's probably in her early 30s.
I pegged her at, like, 32 to 35.
Yeah. So she's a decade. So, 10 years in, is he going to feel trapped? Is he going to feel like, I missed out on my 20s and I need to go out and party and find this kind of endless cycle? And that's the other thing, too, about people that are at different points in their life, you know, with any relationship. It's like, you want to, generally, obviously there's always exceptions, but you want different things when you're 20 than when you're 30. Mm-hmm. And when you're 40 compared to 30, that's why sometimes relationships with big gaps, they can work, but oftentimes they end up not working because the people are at two different points in their lives.
Right. Well, especially at that, at those hyper specific
developmental
points in time. You're right. Like, if he was 42 and she was 52,
right,
that's much more manageable than 22 and 32, you know?
Exactly. But he's still trying to figure his stuff out and find who he is. And in 10 years, that may be a very different person.
Yeah.
I think it's going to be, right, because he's working at Mr. Meat Stick and doing all this stuff. And now he ends up at the end of the movie with, like, a real job. And he's helping people. He's working at, like, a nonprofit organization. So, like, he's getting a job. He's helping people and making a difference. You know, I think that his life is going to have a very different trajectory now than where if he just stayed at Mr. Meat Stick and party starting, right?
Because
we see him at these bar mitzvahs, and the first bar mitzvah that he goes to, he does a really great job because he just shows up and parties.
He's just being goofy, and then he's not doing it for pay. Like, he's
And then that kind of... It's not a job that he has to think about, or the details, or here's when this part of the you know.
He just sees a party that's failing and wants to fix it.
And I like also you know, how that lines up with the beginning of the movie when it opens. We see him partying in college with his girlfriend, and what kind of sets him off on this whole relationship searching thing is that his girlfriend is going to Barcelona to go to grad school or whatever, you know, she's going to be doing after they graduate. And he's like, I want to go with you. And she's just like, come on, you don't have any plan. Like, you're not going to follow me around like a puppy dog. Like,
right.
I'm going to get my master's or whatever she's going to be studying there. And you don't even know what your next thing is. What are you going to do after school? And his only answer is follow you to Barcelona. So he's like, I want to work and get the money to go to Barcelona. Meanwhile, he's checking social media and she's hanging out with new friends. And one picture, he's like, who's that guy? And then the next picture, he's like carrying her piggyback or something.
Right.
Where, like, it's progressively, he's like, wait a minute here. And then it's clear to him when he sees more pictures that they're in a relationship. So like, she's moved on. She probably found someone that has a job and a career and all that. And he hasn't grown up yet. And they don't ever make it. I like that they don't make it like this big throwdown fight. Like, they leave with the possibility they may be together.
Right.
But the more you see of this character, you're like, that's
not gonna be.
It can't work, right? And so I do like.
And he can't go with her. Like, he needs. He doesn't want to be a kept man.
Yeah. Or,
I mean, I think he was willing to be, not seeing it through that prism, but that's what it would be.
Yeah.
But that's what Domino would have been too, right? Mm-hmm. Like, you know, except she doesn't seem to have the means to keep him. But you know, like, he needs to go start his life.
Yeah. Exactly. So we see at that first bar mitzvah, he just starts the party, but he's also, you know, throughout the movie, he carries around this water bottle that's labeled vodka. and it really is all vodka. Yeah. And so it's to, I think it's to make it clear to the audience. He says, like, he tries to get out and says, like, oh, it's a joke. It's water. And then he's like, I'm sorry. Like, we know it's vodka, but I think it was to make it clear throughout the film. So you're not questioning, well, was it water?
Right.
Or, you know, like, what was he drinking? Like, no, he's chugging down vodka. So this guy is a partier.
Yeah.
And that is great for starting parties. It's not great for running businesses and taking care of children and all that stuff. So we see him, he does a great job, and then all the moms are surrounding him, and they're like, we want you to be our party planner, because all these kids are going to be having bar mitzvahs in these circles. All the kids that visit them are going to be having their bar mitzvahs. And so they need someone to start the party. DJ Ron, or whoever the DJ was just playing music that no one liked, and all the people were at their tables. No one was on the dance floor. Andrew got them up and partying. So he decides, oh, I'm going to be a party planner and quit Mr. Meatsticks. Man, I felt kind of bad for Brad Garrett, but the way that he kept dunking on him, like, clearly Andrew didn't have much respect for Brad Garrett's character. And, you know, ultimately we find out that, you know, he's taking care of his mom, but he doesn't think she's happy. And he's like, what does he say? How much does a party planner pay? And he fires back with some line like, I heard it's like just beneath
a soulless pharmaceutical executive,
right? Yeah. And he's just like, what'd you say to me? It's these lines,
but,
are...
but like, that's the thing that, like, it sounds insult. I mean, it is insulting, but it's like, at the same time, it's like, whose roof you living under?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, it's like, you know, you can,
who's providing the food on this table right now?
Right. Like, right. It's like, you can think that I'm awful all you want, but it sure doesn't stop you from eating the food that I provide.
I know. And that's, I think that's the other self-awareness at the beginning of the film Andrew lacks.
Yeah.
He's not mature enough to understand that. Like, he's, Brad Garrett's character is kind of a stick in the mud. We see he's like, he's not having fun with the rest of them. He's very serious. Every time someone says a curse word, he's very strict about, don't say that. And he's just kind of a fuddy-duddy.
But the thing is that just because he's not living the way Andrew would like him to live doesn't mean that he's not living the way he would like to live.
Sure.
You know, and like, there's a lot of that, like, right, like that applies to these relationships as well, that it's like, just because you think that these are weird relationships, like, that's not your judgment to make, right? Like, that's, if they're cool with it, that's ultimately all that matters. In the same way, kind of the mirror image of that, even though I was dismissive of it at first, is the relationship with him and Maisie, right? Like, we're like, come on, she's adorable, she's age appropriate.
And
like,
Maisie went to school with him and was a popular girl.
Yeah.
They didn't run in the same circles. And she's like, did you have a crush on me? And he was like, I figured you had a lot of suitors.
Yeah, he's like everyone had a crush on you.
Yeah, there's no chance there. And you know, but it's a cute relationship, and she basically didn't give him the time of day back then.
Yeah.
But they hook up, and it's a cute relationship. Like you said, it's age appropriate. They seem...
But that's the thing, right? That's wish fulfillment for us. Yeah. Just because we think it makes sense, if they don't think it makes sense, then it doesn't make sense.
And clearly the sparks were not flying. The scene where they hook up...
Right. You see them having sex, and it's
it's
just
horrible.
It's very perfunctory.
And I thought, again, I credit to this guy, and that's why I want to watch his other movie, because he's writing this movie, and I think it's very funny.
I love when he's like, well, do you want to have sex again? She's like, oh no.
Yeah, very matter of fact. It's funny.
Like, not even mean, just like, no, that was, it's fine, we did that, but
no emotion in there. No, thank you.
Yeah, just don't need to do it again.
And the humor, that's where the humor is very that mumblecore type of feel, where it's not in a mean way, and it's not played up like yuckity yuck, but it's a very funny line delivered the way that it is. And that's how a lot of the humor is throughout the film. But I like it when they're having sex and it's awful, and then she looks at him and she's like, why are you staring at me? She's like, close your eyes. She's like, they are closed. And she's like, they were open, I just saw them, you're looking right at me.
I know. And the whole time I was thinking, well, but then your eyes aren't closed, or you wouldn't know that his eyes aren't closed.
So, I mean, I think they were closed and she opened them for a second or something, and then saw him like staring down at her. It's like, your eyes have been open this whole time. But it was a very like real life, just funny kind of thing. But there was no chemistry, there was no red hot passion there.
Right.
They were hooking up to hook up, and then it was like, we aren't compatible. Those two should never be together. As much as we're like, it would be a, you know, relationship, but again, he wouldn't be happy. I think that's another side of relationships we see, is like, just because you're together with someone that's attractive and you have physical attraction, they're the same age as you, maybe they're in the same part of life, but what life is that? It wouldn't be a happy life, right? So you're seeing kind of the other side of that. So he starts working the party planning. Meanwhile, one of the bar mitzvahs, Domino, shows up, and she has a miscarriage and gets blood on her dress. We don't know where she's been, and there's this scene that's really, I mean, Andrew shows up looking for her, and he's in the bathroom, and she's like, I'm in here, I got blood on my dress, and he thinks she's on her period, but she's like, I'm going to need a lot of paper towels and all this, and so they have to figure out a way that she can get out of the party without having anyone see her and be asking her questions. She doesn't want to draw any attention to what's right. happened. Obviously, it's a horrible situation that's just happened, and he comes up with this really clever, sweet way. Is there's a t-shirt booth at the bar mitzvah and has them, they're like the ones you get at Six Flags, the spray painted type yeah. of templates with your name across them, and you're thinking, how is she going to get out of this? How are they going to do this? And they all, four of them, he, his little brother, her daughter, and her, all walk out in these big long, you know, flowing t-shirts. So it looks like they're together in a group. It's not weird for her to be singled out. Why are you right. wearing a weird t-shirt? So it was a very sweet thing. And he ends up going over there and making sure the daughter gets to bed all right. And they end up talking afterwards. And we find out that Joseph didn't even know she was pregnant. You know, and I kind of took that as she wasn't, I think because she's still in a place where she, even though they're engaged, I read it like she still wasn't even sure exactly if she was going to have the kid with him, if she wanted to end up going through the marriage. Like, I think she was so much trying to figure things out that she never even brought it up. Like, do I even tell this guy? Am I going to keep the baby? Am I going to marry this guy? I don't know. What was your guys' read on her not telling him?
Well, the uncertainty thing for sure. But then that also, you know, we already talked about that very early on. It's like, she's still trying to, like I said, like put things together. So it would surprise me if, like, because she's already questioning so much of this marriage, and, you know, she's obviously there is some kind of a connection there between her and Andrew. So it doesn't surprise me. Like, it was like, I'm not really sure about this yet. Also, you have to understand that Joseph's not really there a lot. So yeah. She's having to take care of her daughter, who's, you know, she's a teenager, but she's autistic. And there's a lot of stuff going on that end already, which is not super great. And then on the other hand, you also have a new baby on the way. But husbands, you know, the future husband's not really there a lot right now. So what happens in that scenario? It's like, can I handle that?
Yeah.
Or is he going to be there for me when I need, because I'm going to need help?
Yeah, it's just her general ambivalence about the relationship.
Yeah. So that was another reason, another little clue that I read into of her not, I mean, usually in a healthy relationship, I mean, I know it doesn't always happen, but if you're engaged to someone, you're going to be married, there's not a lot of reason to hide being right. pregnant. And so her hiding it was another clue for me that she still wasn't quite sure in her own mind if she was going to go through with this marriage. Like, there was no other really reason to hide it, but she ends up losing the baby and Andrew's there for her. And she ends up, you know, after they talk about it, she ends up jumping on top of him on the couch and starts making out with him. And to his credit, like, Andrew is a 22-year-old guy who's clearly attracted to her. I would see a lot of guys in that situation would just hook up.
Right.
But, like, she's been through a lot, and he actually realizes he's the good guy in this situation. He's like,
she's in a very emotionally fragile state at that point. It's almost tantamount to being drunk in terms of, like, are you taking advantage of this person in that moment?
Yeah, she's so hurt. She's dealing with so much stuff that Andrew was there, and on top of that, he was very sweet and a great guy. Like, he was doing the perfect thing you could do to help her out, and obviously that's very attractive, and it's just like, oh, you're there for me, I want someone, I don't want to be alone. But the way that he takes it, he's like, I'm sorry, I can't, I want to, but I don't think you want to.
Right.
And I thought that was a pretty cool, you know, it's different in this type of movie where it's like, even though they've got this chemistry and he likes her, he said no and realized, like, I don't know if you really want to do that, let's think this through a little bit more, and also you've been through this traumatic evening.
Agree.
So I like that. But, you know, this really just sets them off on this series of, we go to different bar mitzvahs, he's doing the party planning, but we see that he starts to have trouble at each one. So at that one that with where he helped her out that we just talked about, he had gotten into a fight with a kid because the kid was picking on her daughter.
Right.
And he was like, hey, that's not cool. And he wasn't like, I mean, Andrew was being pretty cool about it himself. He's just like, hey, what are you doing? And he said, I'm picking on her. She's, you know, she was held back and she's taller and older than all of us.
She shouldn't be here because she's too old.
Yeah. And being really crappy. And so Andrew's like, hey, you don't want to do that. And he ends up saying, like, the most threatening thing he said at the end wasn't even like super aggressive, but he's like, you're just feeling bad. Like, you're trying to make yourself feel like she can't beat you up. He's like, you can't beat me up. He's like, you know, who could beat you up for sure? Clearly him, yeah. But you know, but he doesn't say it. And then the dad walks over. What are you doing with my son? And this is the stereotypical thing. You know, everybody's kid's a little angel,
right?
What are you doing to my son? Oh, I'm just trying to make sure no one's being bullied. He's like, you need to get out of here. And then he's, and then there's this constant thing of, oh, I can smell the alcohol in your breath. He's
right.
Like, have you been drinking? And before this, apparently he had played WAP at the bar mitzvah.
Yeah.
And I like when the kid's mother, you know, comes up to start, you know, getting into this whole mix, and he's like, you just said that the rabbi had everyone wanted everyone to get their wet ass on the dance floor. Like, the way she said it so matter of factly, and you know, and it's a very comedic moment, but also very tense. So he gets into this shuffle here. So he's starting to, he's drinking, he's trying to get these parties started, but he's constantly drinking in order to have a good time, which to me screams unhappiness. He thinks he needs alcohol to cover up, you know, his unhappiness and to have a good time and to be able to do these parties. That's kind of this cycle that we get into of him trying to figure his stuff out. He's going on job interviews, trying to get a real job. Meanwhile, balancing this new relationship with Dakota Johnson, trying to see if there's anything there. But he's at the parties and he's having problems. And jump ahead to the big one was they were at the bar mitzvah, and that little kid, they start picking on
Lola.
So
he gives her, this is like kind of the climax of the movie. Like, he gives her a magic cube, which is, like, I guess a form of a Rubik's Cube.
Like, with seven sides or something.
Yeah, that it's she's, like fixated on. That's one of her, you know, coping mechanisms.
And it's cute. I should say, watch this movie, because we can't do it justice, because it's full of all these small little interactions.
Yeah.
But he basically says at the beginning, I bet I can get Lola on the dance floor. And Domino's like, no, you can't. Like, she knows her daughter. She doesn't dance and socialize with these things. She doesn't feel comfortable. He's like, I bet you. She's like, I'll give you $1,000. He's like, you're going to give me $1,000? She's like, I'll bet you $300 I can get her on the dance floor. And it ends up, he does. They dance all night. They have a great time. And that's where this little relationship starts. And you're questioning, well, could this work? They're really good together. But we don't see it for a while. And then finally he shows up and gives her the cube.
Yeah.
And then later at this bar mitzvah, we see them, three kids running around, taking it away. And that's when he's on the stage, and he's simultaneously, he's like, he's doing the cha-cha slide, which is where the movie, you know, gets this title, but he's trying to hold it together and do this dance. He sees that happening, and then he goes and starts chasing them down. The little brother David and his friend, actually, who he had talked to before, had said those kids are jerks, and they're like, I'm gonna beat him up someday. Well, they do. David, who's dealing with his own stuff, there's so much going on in this movie. David is trying to have his first kiss with a girl and is working on his own relationship. He's a few years, or not a few years, he's 12, he's this age with the bar mitzvahs, and he's trying to have his first kiss. And he's right in the middle of that, and he sees those kids being mean. So he drops, you know, unselfishly, he stops with, you know, with his girlfriend and goes to chase them down. And they start beating up these kids. And then Andrew sees it from the stage and jumps down. And then the parents show up, and then his parents show up, and they're all chasing each other. And this big climax, punches are getting thrown. Did the dad punch Leslie Mann? Did he punch
like
his mom?
Yeah, like, he went to punch. Yes. He went to punch Andrew and missed
the mom.
and punched the mom right in the face.
Okay, it was all happening really fast, and that's what I thought happened. I'm like, oh crap, the dad of the jerk kid did it.
Yeah, and then you
then Brad Goward steps
right. Then you see the stepdad come in and like clocks that and just drops him like college algebra.
Yeah, and I love how you've got all these different things coming together, because all these characters are trying to deal with their own stuff, and we're not so sure about Brad Garrett. Yes, he provides for them, but are they really happy? And, you know, so you question, would he stand up for these kids? And, you know, what, he doesn't really do anything. He's kind of just there.
There's a great moment in the car on the ride home when they're like singing his praises, and the dad's like, no. And then he's got this smirk on his face like, I can clock that dude.
Yeah, because the little kid that wanted to fight the bully, he's like, man, I have never seen a right hook like that. Like, I mean, they were really going off on how great he was. And he starts smirking like, like, you know, and you start to see that's the first time you really see any life out of
right.
him. Like, and, you know, and I like that, because I feel like all this brought them closer together.
Yeah.
You know, the mom, Leslie Mann's character, is worried about her son. And he's saying, I want to go chase someone in Barcelona. And you know, they have that nice moment. She's like, you've never mentioned Barcelona. He's like, yes, it's a dream of mine. Okay. I think I would have heard of your dream to go to Barcelona. Really funny. Again, great writing. They've kind of settled on, I'm not going to Barcelona. I'm going to figure my stuff out. The dad is there to protect his family, and they're all closer together now. And the son David ended up having his first kiss, we find out. Everyone's kind of figuring their stuff out. And then, yeah, and it kind of ends up where, oh, and that's where the Joseph, Domino's fiance Joseph, he was at that party because of all the stuff that Domino and Andrew have been through. She wasn't going to show up at the next party. He had babysat the night before. They both came home drunk and obviously had a heated conversation. And I think Andrew was involved in it somehow. Whether or not she said anything happened with Andrew, I'm not exactly
sure. Yeah, I really got the vibe.
On.
Yeah, he had been the topic of conversation.
But he
at
clearly
that night.
Was the topic. Yeah. I don't know how much got left out, but, you know, Andrew and Domino ended up making out a couple of times, and I don't know if it came out, but he was the topic, and so clearly it was a very awkward situation. And so at this party where all this happens, Joseph brings Lola, and so he's like, where's Domino? And she didn't want to come to the party. Well, he doesn't believe that.
Yeah,
he says, is she okay? And he knows obviously what had happened earlier in the film, and he's like, is she sick, is she okay? And he's like, she's fine. She just didn't want to come. So after all this stuff goes down,
well, and they had also told him at that point that his babysitting services would no longer be needed for Lola.
Yeah, which is clearly a read on like someone put their foot down,
right?
And you don't know if it's a hostile thing,
yeah,
or if it's, you know, whatever. But they have decided together after that conversation that he is not going to be involved in Lola's life anymore and not going to be around. So after the whole situation, he borrows his mom's car and he's like, yeah, I've just got to do something. I got to go see a friend. It's fine. And the mom's like, are you okay to drive? And he's like, yeah, I'm fine. And this is where I'm like, oh God, we're going to get some kind of like a whiplash situation. We're going to get, you know, where he's going to get an accident.
Right.
He has been drinking and he's trying to get over there. And I really was fearing for the worst. So I did not know what to expect, but he rushes over there to see her and she opens the door. She's like, Andrew, what are you doing? And she's like, are you okay? And she's like, yeah, I just didn't want to go to the party. So it's like, that's another, Joseph was telling the truth.
Right.
He wasn't being a jerk about it. We're maybe led to believe that he did something. He locked her away. He hurt her. You know, what is she doing? Why isn't she there?
Right.
No, she just didn't want to go to the party. So anyway, they have this conversation. This is the one where it really mirrors that first opening scene when he was 12 and the older woman, he professes his love. He says, I love you, you know, and I want to be with you. And this is, again, the refreshing conversation they have where she's just like, what is that going to be? You know, how will this ever work? And,
right,
you know, she lets him down real gently and it's realistic. It's heartbreaking for him, but also I think we can recognize that these two, it's not going to work out. What will they do? All those things we talked about throughout the podcast. And so he's heartbroken, but, you know, he goes, he walks away. Joseph pulls up, and so he's thinking, this guy's going to come clock me or whatever. You know, I took it as like, he's got to get out of there. He starts walking away, and Joseph tracks him down. He gets into his car to pull off, and he's like, roll the window down. And he's like,
it's great delivery here, too, because he's stern, but doesn't sound mean.
Mm-mm.
Like, right? He doesn't, it's not like it's threatening, but he's just like,
well, you don't know.
You can read it either way. But he's very matter of fact, like, don't be dumb. Just roll the window down.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah. And again, it's the way it's filmed from like the driver's side through the window.
Yeah.
It's filmed really locking onto Andrew, and he's gone through this really emotional thing where he's breaking down. And yeah, Joseph finally, once he does roll the window down, Andrew's like, I'm sorry, I'm just a dumb kid. And then Joseph's like, no, hey, I want to thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you for taking care of Lola. And it's a really sweet moment. Where he's matter of fact, like, it's fine. He's not there to beat him up. He's not questioning, hey, why were you here? Like, I think at this point, all the characters are aware of what's going on. Like,
right. He
knows there's something not quite right with him babysitting and with Domino, but they've clearly talked about it, and then they're going to get married, and things are going to be fine. And so I figured that everyone was in a really good place at this point, other than Andrew, because he's just now learning of all this.
Right.
But, you know, and he's just like, hey, I get it, you know. This guy's a kid. He's trying to figure his stuff out, and he just protected my future stepdaughter.
Right.
That was cool. It was a nice moment.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, and so that's where it ends. He gets the job working at that organization, so we see he's you know, starting his life off and start the first day of the rest of his life, and he goes to pick up David at school, and Domino is there to pick up her daughter, and he gets in the car and they have a nice little moment like just to wrap things up. And she's like, I wasn't sure if I'd ever see you again, but I got you this card. And another cute moment, she's like, but I realized I don't have your address. I know nothing about
you.
It's really cute, really fun moment. But she ends up giving him a card. He opens it at home, and it's got some money in it, a few $100s.
I assumed it was supposed to be the $300 she owed him, and
that's kind of what I figured. Yeah,
and that in that, because it said spend it on yourself.
Spend it on yourself. Yeah, exactly. And it was nice. And you know, that's it. It's like, you know, the character, Andrew obviously grew and learned some things, but plot wise, it's like there's not a ton going on.
Yeah.
But I really liked it. I loved all these little moments. And again, I love the idea of people just figuring stuff out, because we've all been there, and almost all of us go through it with these exact things.
Yeah.
These life, relation. I mean, life, obviously, but a part of life is relationships, work, going to school, and figuring all this stuff out. So I liked it. I think Cooper Rafe is a charismatic dude. I believed he was this person. I believed he was Andrew, the way he wrote this character for himself. You know, it wasn't showy. I heard some complaints online about some people think it's kind of gross, the whole writer, director, like actor, like, oh, I wrote this part for myself to be the star of this movie or whatever. But I liked it. I thought it was good.
I mean, we started off this podcast talking about Matt Damon, right?
Yeah.
Like, I mean, he wouldn't have a career if he didn't do that.
True.
So it's, you know, like, I mean, yeah, I don't get the complaint. Like, it's especially like this movie cost about $1.25.
Yeah.
Like, you know what I mean? Like,
he wasn't riding himself into some $100 million.
Right. Like, it's like, yeah, he created a showcase for himself. Like, actors have been doing that since the beginning of time. Like, I think
it's more so when it's the writer director. Like, and like, I get that Damon wrote Good Will Hunting with Ben Affleck.
Would have directed it, if somebody would have let him.
True.
You
but,
know what I mean?
Yeah. I don't think it's, I mean, people are entitled to their opinion. I'm just saying he was good in this role.
Yeah.
I like the story he wrote. I thought it was funny and heartfelt.
And nobody's going to write a role like this for him. And if they do, they're not going to give it to him.
Right.
They're going to give it to somebody that already. So he created an opportunity for himself.
Yeah.
That seems smart to me.
Yeah.
Like, I don't.
Good, yeah.
Yeah. Like, it's, you know, I mean, yeah. Like, performers have been doing that since the beginning of time. Like, they're like, I can't get cast, and then I'll go start a theater troupe.
Yeah.
Like, that's Gary Sinise, John Malkovich, you know, with their theater troupe. Like, that same thing. They, you know, they went and, I mean, they weren't necessarily writing it, but they created their own opportunities. Yeah. That's. If you think that's a cheat, that's why you're not succeeding.
I mean,
like,
yeah,
you know,
I wouldn't be surprised if some of this was like inspired by moments of his life. Like, I'm sure.
I would bet money on it. Like, it's I would agree wholeheartedly, which is part of why no one would ever write a role like this for him, because it's for him. And so he. Yeah.
Yeah. I think he's really good at writing these believable situations, just the interactions, the everyday part of life. It felt real. It didn't feel contrived. It didn't feel like it was just, I mean, certainly not Hollywood in this movie, but you know, it felt believable, and he felt believable. So I think he did a great job all around. I'm excited for what he saw next. And I definitely want to check out his last movie. If people really liked that one, I'm
yeah, I enjoyed this, and I watched it with my wife, and she dug it too.
So. Awesome. Sharia, what'd you think? Final thoughts?
Yeah, no, I really liked it. I mean, we talked about this earlier when you started off. It was like so many slice of life moments, and I'm a sucker for slice of life movies, like especially when good, because you're able to capture this sort of essence in there, especially if you've been through that sort of phase. You know? And there are moments in this where I think back to like, not very long ago, but still the early 20s when you're trying to figure out some stuff, you know, and so much is changing that time, you know, like 10 years is one thing we were talking about between the age gap between these two over here. But I can think back to when I was like 18 to when I was 22, those 4 years, totally different people.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
I can't, you know, I can't look at 18 year old and be like, yeah, that's exactly what I'm like even right now. Like,
right.
You know, like I've been through different experiences. Things have changed. So many questions have been asked. So I think Cooper Rafe did a great job as a writer, director, and an actor, of course. I thought Dakota Johnson complimented that really, really well. There was one thing, a couple of things that I thought were a little underdeveloped. Like there's one thing we didn't bring up. They go back to the fact that Leslie Mann, his mom, is bipolar.
Yeah, she has some mental health issues. Yeah.
Yeah, they don't really go into that too much. I was expecting it to pop up at some point.
Yeah, there was a lot of setup for that, and I thought that it would have a little bit more payoff. But I also think it kind of feeds into why she's okay with this relationship that they don't understand because of her mental health issues. Mm-hmm. She, you know, like he provides a stability for her.
Yeah,
that
it's true.
You know, and you know, here's the other thing: he's a pharmaceutical executive, so like maybe he understands her struggle a little bit more than you might give him credit for because of what he does for a living.
Yeah,
you know,
and I mean, at no point do you think he's a bad dude. The whole thing,
right? He's just a bland dude.
It just seemed like that. Yeah, the kids want happiness for their mom, and they didn't see her as being truly happy, but. She also didn't seem unhappy, and he didn't seem like he was doing anything wrong. So just to be clear about
that. They just hadn't found that synergy yet, I think.
Yeah.
And then eventually when the clocking moment happens, it's like, okay, there's
that
guy.
That was exactly. That was a cute moment where everyone was in tune. At dinner, at all those different scenes at the house, you never saw them all operating as a unit.
Right.
And you never saw that, and they all came together in that scene, and it's exactly what they needed. So it was really a neat.
And it takes a while for a blended family to start to function as a unit. You don't just flip a switch and have that work. It takes a while. So, and you know, if you like mumblecore stuff, I know people talk about movies all the time. But I don't hear it getting a lot of talk, but there's a show on Netflix called Easy.
Okay.
And it's from Joe Swanberg, and that show is great.
Okay.
Like, I cannot recommend it highly enough, but it's mumblecore and it's like an anthology show. But then sometimes it starts to interconnect.
Okay.
And
I've heard of it, but I haven't seen it. He and the Duplass brothers are the big mumblecore.
Yeah, and that show's really good. I wish it got more heat. I wish people talked about it more. It's totally worth checking out. So,
awesome.
But I guess that's it for this one. Let's go around the table and everyone can say where to find them. Sharia.
Hey. Let me start that again. You can find me on Twitter at Shara Chavla with an underscore at the beginning. Or you can find me on YouTube under the same exact name. That's where I usually do most of my stuff. So I hope to see you all there.
Awesome. And this is Kevin. You can follow me on Twitter at Kevin R. Brackett.
And this is Tom. You can follow me on Twitter at Roger Kubert or on Facebook at facebook.com/Tom O'Keefe. You can find the show online, facebook.com/Real Spoilers. While you're there, like the page, join the group. And of course, don't forget our Patreon, patreon.com/Real Spoilers. So that's it for this one. Thanks for tuning in. And until next time, Benjamin stops Elaine's wedding.
Get ready for a spoiler. Won't say it twice because we already warned you. Better watch out. It's going to ruin the plot. Real spoilers. Real spoilers. Real spoilers.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.